Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Chof Pei Amud Bet with the new Perek.
B'nei Yer, Shemachru Chuva Shel Yer, the people of the city that sold the street of the city, Luchim B'damav Beit Knesset, they can use the proceeds to buy a shul. Beit Knesset, if they sell the shul, Luchim Teva, they can use that to buy an Aron Kodesh. Teva, they sell the Aron Kodesh, Luchim Mitpachot, they can buy with that the covers for the Sfarim. Mitpachot, if you sell the covers, Lochim is Sfarim. With that, they can buy Sfarim. Sfarim here means Nevi'im Ektuvim. Sfarim, you can sell Nevi'im Ektuvim. The proceeds you can use, Lochim Torah, you can buy with that a Torah. So here we go, what's called Malim Bekodesh Ve'in Moridin. That here you're allowed to rise in Kedusha. So if you sell something that is Kadosh, you can use the proceeds to buy something that is more Kadosh. But the other way around, which is if you sell something more Kadosh, you can't lower, use the proceeds and buy something with a lower Kedusha. Aval. If they sold the Torah, lo yichu sfarim. You can't use the proceeds to buy Nevi'im Ktuvim. The only thing you can use with the proceeds is buy another Sefer Torah. Sfarim, if they sell Nevi'im Ktuvim, lo yichu mitpachot. Then you can't buy covers with that. Mitpachot, if you sell the covers, lo yichu teva, they can't buy an Aron Kodesh with it. Teva, lo yichu beit Knesset, they sell an Aron Kodesh, they can't use that to buy a shul. Beit Knesset, they sell the shul, lo yichu et arochov. They can't buy a street with it. V'chein b'motrehen. Even if you use some of the proceeds to buy something on its peer level or greater than it, the excess funds, you still can't lower the Kedusha. All the funds that are generated through the sale of these objects have to be used at the equal or higher level of Kedusha. Now the Gemara asks about the Rechova Shel Ir. What does it mean, the city street? Bnei Ir Shemachru Rechova Shel Ir, the people of the city that sold the street, Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zo Divrei Merabbi Menachem Bar Yosi Stumta. This is actually a Dat Yachid, our Mishnah. If you look in Tosefta, that position is authored by Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi. Aval Chachamim Amrim, the Chachamim disagree, and they say over here, HaRachov Ein Bo Mishum Kedusha. The city street has no Kedusha. Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi, my time, eh? So let's understand what Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi, why does he say it has Kedusha? Hova Mitpalim Bo Bitaniyot, and here, B'mamadot is controversial whether that should be in the Girsa at all. The Rabbanan say that's just a temporary single event situation. That's not a permanent type of situation. So we know from the Gemara and Tanit that we learned together that when they had the Taniyot Geshem, the people used to gather together in the street. And they used to have tefillah on the street. And they used to take the Aron Kodesh out of the shul and bring it out to the street. It was all part of the process of tshuva. So over there, the Rabbi Yossi says that he thinks that that somehow imbues the street with Kedusha. The Chachamim say that that's not a permanent status of the street, that something happens on a one-off basis, and therefore it doesn't imbue the street with Kedusha. Now, the question about Mamadot is that we don't find anywhere that the Mamadot came out into the streets. By Mamadot, the Mishnah and Tanit says they used to gather together in the main city and go into the shul. Now, we do know that with regards to Mishnayot and Bikurim, it says there that they used to gather the cities together and then go up to Yerushalayim. When they gather those cities together, it says that they did that out in the street. So the possibility is people extrapolate from that the same would be true by the Mamadot. There would just be too many people in the city when they gather together to be in the shul, so therefore they did it in the street. But again, many, including Tosafot here, Rashi brings in also an opinion like that eliminate Mamadot from the gears over here and simply say that Hoil Va'am Mitpalim Bo B'taniyot. And the Rabbanan disagree again because it's a Grai B'alma. Now, Beit HaKnesset, you sell a Shul Lochim Teva, you're allowed to buy an Aron Kodesh with that. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yochanan. Loshanu El Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim. You're only allowed to sell a Shul of the villages. Of a Beit Knesset Shel Krachim, when you're talking about a Shul of the cities, Kevin de Ma'alma Atule, Lo Matzim Izavnele. Since it comes from all over, you can't sell it. De Havile de Rabim, because it belongs to the public as a whole. So here, Tosafot brings two interpretations down of what it means that came into Ma'alma Atule. One possibility is simply that these are people from all over come and daven in the shul. And the shul, when it was built for that purpose, to service not only the people of the city, but all the people that visit the city. And because of that, it grants a certain amount of ownership or kedusha that is associated not only with the people of the city or the local people, but all the people that come to daven in that shul, who was intended to service. That's one way to learn it. On the other hand, it also gives a second answer here about what is the Me'alma Atule. That means that people donate money to the shul from all over. It's not just the local people that are donating money. The money's being donated by people from all over the place. And therefore, the local people don't have a right to sell it because technically the other people own it as well since they donated money towards the building. So those are two possibilities about what it means to Alma Atule. So now, Amar Rav Ashi, Hai Beik Nishta de Mata Mafsia, the shul de Mata Mafsia, Afa Gav de Alma Atula, even though people come to the shul from all over, Kevin da Data di Dika Atu, the only reason they come there is because I dive in there, Ibinam is Vinala. If I want, I can sell it. Meaning that I'm the draw. It's not the fact that the shul is a public shul, it's the fact that I'm there that makes it so popular, and therefore I would have the right to sell it as if it's a private shul and not a public shul. There was an incident where they had a shul of the coppersmiths that was in Yerushalayim. They sold it to Rabbi Eliezer. Then he made it into whatever he needed. He did whatever he wanted with it. Yerushalayim is a city, and there is a shul of the city. How could they sell it to him and then he could use it? How did it lose its kedusha? It says, "How you bake nishta zutehavo?" Vinu Abdua, it was a small shul. It was not a public shul because it was the coppersmith's shul. It was a private shul that they used, or that small group used, and therefore did not get the status of a city shul, which means that people from the outside came. It was built specifically for them, they made it themselves, and it was used by that small group, and therefore it does not take on a status of a shul of the city. Meitavei. So now the Gemara is going to ask about this, about regards to the fact that it was in Yerushalayim. It says, by the Nigayim, bebeit eretz achuzatchem. When you have Nigayim in the house, it only applies to houses that are in eretz achuzatchem. Eretz achuzatchem means in Eretz Yisrael. Nigay bayit, it only apply in Eretz Yisrael. But here it means eretz achuzatchem, things that are part of the Yerusha, or the part of that has been divided amongst the different Shvatim. Achuzatchem mitamei bin Nigayim, ven Yerushalayim mitamei bin Nigayim. Your properties can have Nigayim, but Yerushalayim does not get the Nigayim. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shemati lemakom mikdash bavad. I don't think Yerushalayim as a whole is protected, but just the makom mikdash. Gemara says, v'habate knesiyot v'habate midrashot mitamim. Based on that statement of Rabbi Yehuda, it sounds like the shuls and the bate midrash would get Nigayim. Amai, haidukrachim avu. They're public property. They're not private property anymore. They're public property, so why should they get Nigayim? So we're going to amend a Rabbi Yehuda statement to say, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shemati lemakom mikudash bilvad. Only places that are holy do not get Nigayim. What are places that are holy? That's the Mikdash itself, the Beit Mikdash, as well as the Batei Knesiot and Batei Midrashot. But my kamiflege, what's the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakama? Tanakama sabar lo nitchalka Yerushalayim nishvatim. Tanakama believes that Yerushalayim was not divided up and given as private ownership to people. Yehuda Savar nitchalkal Yerushalayim neshvatim. Yehuda says, no, that Yerushalayim was not a national city, but rather it was a city that was divided up amongst the Shvatim. Uplukta dehani tanai. And it's similar to another machloket tanim that we know, the Tanya. Maya bechalkosh Yehuda. What was in the portion of Yehuda? Harabait, alishkot, vazarot. Everything on the eastern side of the Mikdash was in the area of Shevet Yehuda. Maya bechalkosh of Binyamin. What was in the chelik of Binyamin? Yerushalayim sits on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. So Yehuda's border goes up to the point, the eastern side of the Mikdash, all the way up through the Azarot. Whereas in Chelkosh Binyamin, you have the Ulam, the Heichal, the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. You have all the holy areas on the western side, that all belongs to Shevet Binyamin. Now, Verutza Haita, what about the Mizbeach and Ben Ulam the Mizbeach? Verutza Haita Yotza, Michelkosh Yehuda, there was this little projectile that went out of the area of Yehuda on the east. Nichnase bechelkosh Binyamin, and it penetrated into the areas of Binyamin, uba mizbeach banui, and in that area the mizbeach was built. Now, truthfully, it's not the mizbeach that was built. The Gemara in Zvachim talks about the fact that it was only on the side of the mizbeach, and it was on the areas where you didn't have yisoda mizbeach. There were certain sides that didn't have yisoda mizbeach. That's because that area was covered by Yehuda. Nevertheless, that projectile of Yehuda bothered Binyamin. He was upset about it and he wanted to swallow it up to consolidate his Yerusha there and hold the whole Mizbeach within his territory. That Rashi explains over here, a person who's upset, he rubs and shakes his clothing, has anxiety about it. He is bothered by it and it causes him to move and to shake and to tremble, whatever it is, and he wants to get it back. So chofef alav Binyamin is trying to get it back. There are different explanations given with regard to the Midrash as to why Binyamin was so worried. If he got the Kodesh HaKodeshim, he got all these other areas, then why was he so worried about it? One possible explanation is that Hashem told him that the Mizbech was going to be split in half. Binyamin didn't know which half he was getting, the western half or he was getting the eastern half, so he didn't know which half he was getting, and that's what was Chofev Alav Kol Hayom. And therefore, Zocha Binyamin Naseh Ushpichtin L'Shechina, because he was worried about this, and because it meant so much to him, he was made as the host of the Shechina. The other possibility is that we know that the Beit Mikdash, the Shechina, the Aron HaKodesh, was found in the area of Shevet Binyamin, because that was the Kodesh HaKodeshim, but it actually turns out that the Mishkan Shiloh, Nov, and Giv'on were also, according to the Gemara, found in the areas of Shevet Binyamin. So therefore, the always, what does it mean, Zochet Vidush Pizichin of the Shechina was not only in the time of the Mikdash, but even prior to that point in time, it was also the host of the Shechina, Shevet Binyamin. We have another Braita. That Braita obviously says, or that Tana obviously believes that it was split between Yehuda and Binyamin. But now we have another Tana who says that it was not divided amongst the Shvatim. The Tanya, Ein Maskirim Batim B'Yerushalayim, cannot rent houses in Yerushalayim or rent out houses in Yerushalayim, Pnei She'ein Shalem. People who live there out of a easement in a sense, that they have squatters' rights, they've been living there forever, but they don't own it, because it was never given to private ownership. So they just have living rights there, so they can't, when people come to stay with them, they just have to host them, they can't charge them rent. Rabbi Lazar, the way the Girsa is probably Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Aflo Mitot, they can't even rent out the beds. Not only can they not rent out the house, they can't rent out the beds. Nothing belongs to them in Yerushalayim. Fikach, Orot HaKodeshim, Balei Ushpizin, Notlin Otam Bizroah. Therefore, the hides that came off the Kodeshim from people who came up to stay with them, they used to take them by force away from them to get some sort of compensation for the fact that they're hosting all these people in their houses in Yerushalayim. Amar Abaye, Shvamina, from this, Orach Aro, proper etiquette is the Mishbach Inish Kulfa Umashcha Bushpuze. When a person stays at a bed and breakfast or stays by a host, then he should leave over the gulfa, or the leftover wine casks. I mean, whatever you were carrying the wine in, once you finished it, the empty casks, you should leave it with them. And mashcha are the hides from the animals, either that were shechted or brought as korbanot. You should leave them over for your hosts. That's proper etiquette. For all the trouble that they went through to host you, that's a nice thing to do for them. Amar Rava. Here now Rava comes and qualifies the statement about the inability to sell the shul in a major city. That's only in the case when you didn't sell it with the 7 tuvayir, which means basically the board of the city, and mamad ancheir, with the presence of the people, with the acquiescence of the people of the city. If it's sold by the leadership of the city as well as the people of the city, then afilo the mishta beishichra, even to make it into a pub or a bar. And the Bach ends in the gear, so mishtach peire shapir dami, or to spread fruit out over there, is considered to be fine.
There are different interpretations of this. Some say that it means you can use the proceeds, the money, to buy beer with it. And there are others, like the way we explain it, who say that the makom, the location, can be utilized to make it into a pub or to put out fruits that are there. That will have a nafkamino in the end as to the halachot of selling the Beit Knesset, and over the next couple of dapim we'll review this over and over again and show the different shitot that lay out based on this Gemara.
So you see over here, Rashi has an interesting interpretation about this. There are other Rishonim who disagree with Rashi. I'll just note it here. Rashi says that it's an all or nothing proposition, which means that if you do it right, if you sell it with the permission of the leaders of the city as well as the people of the city, then once you've sold it, the money goes, is chulin, and so is the building. Neither of them retain the kedusha. It's as if the kedusha dissipates entirely. On the other hand, if you do it wrong, which is that you sell it without the permission of the people, or permission of the tuveir, then both the money is tofes in kedusha, and the building itself retains its kedusha, and the kedusha cannot be removed. So now back to your question before about shuls that were in neighborhoods where slowly the neighborhood was no longer a Jewish neighborhood. What did they do with it? A lot of times they ran into problems because of this Gemara, the Gemara here, which says that you need the Tuveir and you need the Mamad Ansheir. You need both the leadership as well as the people to acquiesce. And many times there were holdouts, people who lived in the neighborhood or people that didn't want to sell it. And therefore, for many times where they could have sold it and actually got some money out of it or done something good with it. Many times they held on to it for way too long because of this Gemara, which doesn't allow you to sell it and take away the Kedusha and allow it to be used for other items because there were objections to the sale. But if you get the acquiescence of the people and the Tuvei Ayir, then according to Rashi, the sale goes through and the Beit Knesset Kedusha is gone. And the money that you receive for it is also does not have Kedusha. There are other Rishonim believe that in that case, the money actually takes the Kedusha from the Beit Knesset and it's transferred onto the money, but the Beit Knesset itself loses its Kedusha. So that's how you deal with a Beit Knesset that's out of function or no longer is useful. There are ways to sell it in a way to take away the Kedusha of the Beit Knesset. The question will then be the money that you receive for the sale of the Beit Knesset, does that money have Kedusha or does not have Kedusha? And that's subject to a Machloket Rishonim. Ravina Avalei Ha'utila, the Beit Knishta, he had this tell, like the way the word's used in modern Hebrew, a tell means layers of civilization or destroyed cities. So he had a Beit Knesset that was destroyed, that was sitting there, he owned the land. Atal lekamei de Rav Ashi, he went to Rav Ashi, Amar lei, ma'u lemizre, can I plant it? Tamalei zil zavne mishiva tuveir, b'mamad anshei ayir. Go buy it from the Shuvei Tuveir with the permission of the people, Vizara, and then you can plant it. The question is, why did he have to do this? If the Beit Knesset's already destroyed, why does he have to go ahead then and do this whole sale process by which he takes away the Kedusha? Because if the Bayit's not there, then the Kedusha's gone anyway. And so what was the problem? So the Rishonim go two different ways with it. Some of them say that planting it is something that is a little bit more in terms of the denigration or negative thing to do there. And since that would be a pgiah on the kavod of the Beit Knesset, he insisted that it be sold. So that's one way to approach it. Or the other approach was that if you don't agree with Rashi, in order to use the monies for whatever purpose he wanted, get rid of the Kedusha, he would have to do the sale in this manner. So now, Rami Bar Abba, Havakabani Beit Knishta. He was building a shul. Havahai Knishta Atika. There was this old shul, Hava, by the Mistere. He needed to take that apart. He wanted to use the bricks and the boards from the old shul and to bring them over to the new shul. So in order to build the new shul, he would have to dismantle the old shul. He then pondered about whether that was all right to do because of the question of Rav Chista. Damar Rav Chista, Loli store Beit Knishta, the bunny Beit Knishta Achrita. You're not allowed to dismantle the old shul until you've built the new shul. Where it says, Hata Mishum Pshuta, the reason there is because we're afraid if you take down the old shul before you build a new shul, then there will be a Pshia. So, Kihai Gavna Mai. But in my instance, what the case is not a Pshia case. We're in the middle of building the new shul. We're going to transfer the items from the old shul by dismantling it and bring it straight over to the new shul and put it in. So, you're not going to have a problem Pshuta where after they dismantle the old shul, they're going to build a new shul. So, Ata the Kami de Rav Papa, they came before Rav Papa, but Asarle, he says, nope, you can't do it. They both said that it's not allowed to be done. You cannot dismantle the old shul until the new shul is completely in service and is built. That's whether we're worried about pshuta or not pshuta. We need the new shul functioning. We need the shul built before we allow you to dismantle the old shul. Amarava, Hai Beit Knishta, Chilufa Vizvuna Shari. To exchange it or to sell it, to transact in it, is permissible. Ogara umashkona asur, to rent it out or to lend it out or to make a collateral or a pledge is asur. My time b'kedushata akoi, because again in the case of chiluf and zvina, you can get the kedusha off the Beit Knesset and there will be a work. But over here, if you're going to simply rent it out or you're going to make it into a mashkon, then the kedusha still remains of kedusha Beit Knesset, and there it's going to create a problem. Livnei nami chilufinu v'zivninu shari. The bricks of the shul chilufinu v'zivninu shari. To exchange them or to purchase them or to sell them is permissible. Ozufinu asur. But to lend them out is problematic. Again, the Gemara says hanimili batikta. That's only with an existing shul where the bricks are already part of the shul. Then again, if it's part of a sale or it's part of an exchange, then it's permissible because then the Kedusha transfers off of them. On the other hand, to simply lend them out will be problematic because these bricks were already part of a shul and the shul has Kedusha and the bricks attain a certain amount of Kedusha. About Bechadato, if you're talking about a brand new shul, brand new bricks, late lamba, it's not a problem. Because Afila Mandamar Hazmana Miltai, even according to one who says that preparatory stages already grant something, a certain level of Kedusha, Hani Milikona Oreg Bega the Mate. That's if someone like, for instance, weaves a tachrichim for the mate, then even though you didn't put on the mate yet, they might attain a certain level of kedusha or isra'na. But avahacha kitevi la'arig dami. Over here, when the bricks, the new bricks that have yet to be put into the shul or built into the shul, that's not called hazmana. Hazmana is when you are simply a step away from imbuing it with kedusha, which means it just has to be utilized. It's completely ready, and if you utilize it, it will attain kedusha. On the other hand, if you're two steps away, that's not called hazmana. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out here with regards to the bricks that were designated to be used for the shul. That's not called hazmana because you're two steps away. Because first you have to build the shul, and then you have to utilize the shul. So that's two steps away. Same way that if you had string or thread that was spun, but had yet to be made into tachrichim. Again, that's two steps away from becoming something that's kadosh. So even the person who believes that hazmana miltahi, that preparation will already imbue something with kedusha, this is too far away. So therefore, kedavid arig dami v'lekele mandamar. That far away, there's nobody who says hazmana miltahi that it's imbued with kedusha. Matana, if a shul is given as a gift to someone, pligi bar rav acha ravina, chad asar v'chad shari. One of them says it's mutar, one of them says it's asur. Meaning, does the kedusha leave the Beit Knesset when it's granted as a gift? Because we have a principle sometimes that matana kemecher, that sometimes a gift is the equivalent of a transaction, and that's what the question is here. Chad asar v'chad shari, man dasar. The one who says it's asur b'hai tifka kedushata. Where did the kedusha go? Meaning that on what was the kedusha chal when you give it as a gift? Where did the kedusha transfer to? It just dissipated. So that can't be. That's why it's asur. Man deshari ilo de havale hanomine lo avayayivle hadar havale matana kizvine. So he says, if the person was not getting some benefit from granting the gift, he wouldn't have gifted it. But since he is getting a benefit from the gift, it turns into like a transaction. The transaction is about something that's intangible. You're not getting money, but instead you're getting some sort of intangible benefit from granting this gift to this individual. And because of that, it's considered matana kizvine, matana kemecher. A gift is the equivalent of a transaction, and therefore it would be considered as if the kedusha has left the Beit Knesset in that case when it's granted as a gift. Here we move on to some of the items listed in our Mishnah, but an important distinction that's made by the Gemara here. Tashmishei mitzvah nizrakin. Things that are used in the service of a mitzvah can be thrown out when you're done with them. Tashmishei kedusha. Things that service an item that is kadosh, nignazim, they must be put into gnizah. The Hilayin Tashmishei mitzvah. Let me give you examples of things that are utilized in the performance of a mitzvah. Sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzit. These are all items that are used to do a mitzvah. Once you finish with the mitzvah, the item has no residual kedusha. It's just a vehicle for accomplishing the mitzvah, and therefore afterwards you can do as you please with them. We generally are careful not to denigrate them or throw them in the garbage. You don't have to put them into gniza, but we try our best not to be mevazed them, and that's one of the minhagim that people have to keep their lulav until Pesach had to use it for the burning of the chametz. Not because it has to be put in gniza, the lulav technically can be thrown out, but in order not to treat it bibizui and try to do multiple mitzvot with the item, the chayfetz, therefore we try to do something positive with it. But again, not required. Ve'elohein tashmishei kedusha. These are items that are in service of kedusha. Gluskamei sfarim. The sacks of the sfarim. Tefillin u'mezuzot. V'tik shel sefer Torah. The casement of a sefer Torah. An artik shel tefillin or a tefillin bag. V'ritzuot tehem. And the straps of the tefillin. Over here, Tosafot brings up an issue that he's brought up numerous places in Shas, where he argues on Rashi. And he says that the letters that are formed by the ritzuot do not imbue it with kedusha. The dalet that we have in the back on the knot of the shel rosh and the yud that we have in the shel yad, even though those are nice things and they have some meaning, they do not have a din of kedusha. And therefore the ritzuot are only considered to be tashmishei kedusha and not something that is kadosh. They service the tefillin and therefore they're tashmishei kedusha, but they are not themselves kadosh. And that's why Tosafot argues on Rashi, who indicates that the tefillin shel rosh have more kedusha than the tefillin shel yad because they have the shin and the dalet of the Shem Hashem versus the yud of the Shem Hashem that is only found one letter on the tefillin shel yad. Tosfot says it's just not true. The dalet and yud don't have kedusha to them and they're not in the consideration at all. Amarava, merei shava mina hay kursaya. The bima tashmish de tashmish is a second derivative, means two removed from being used because they have the bima. Then you have the cloth that they put on top of the bima, and then they sit the Torah on top of that. So the tashmish of kedusha is the cloth or the parochet that they put the Torah on top of. The bima is only secondary to that, so therefore it'd be shari. It wouldn't have a din of kedusha. Kevin de Chazino, once I saw the Motvi Ilave Sefer Torah, sometimes they don't put a cloth on it, and they put the Sefer Torah directly down on the bima. Amina Tashmish Kedusha, that it does, it's a status of Tashmish Kedusha, Vasur, and you can't sell it, or it takes on all the trappings of something that is a Tashmish Kedusha that requires Gniza. Gamarov Amreshav Amina Hai Prisa Tashmish to Tashmish. I originally thought that the Parochet was a Tashmish to Tashmish. Rashi says it's the Parochet that's inside the Aron. Tosafot says it's the parochet that's outside the Aron. Kevan de Chazid, Aifile, Umanche Sifrei Lave, that sometimes they take the parochet down and wrap up the Sefer Torah in it. Amina Tashmish Kedusho, that it's in service of Kedusha, Vasur, and now it has to be put into Geniza, and it takes on the trappings of something that has Kedusha. Yep, right, they do. They do gain a status of Tashmish Kedusha, just like Rava's explaining over here, that if you take a talus and then you use that to put on the bima or on the table, and then you open up a Sefer Torah on it, then it does attain the status of Tashmish Kedusha, and then it would require to be put in Gniza. In general, our minog is, with regards to Talesim and Tzitzit, that we try to put them in Gniza anyway, even though it's not necessary, we try to put them in Gniza, because they were used for a mitzvah, and maybe even more designated as a Tashmish that is specifically utilized for Tefillah, and in the place of Tefillah. There might be a difference between Talit Gadol and a Talit Katan. That might be why, with, for instance, a tzitzit or a talit katan, you're allowed to go into the bathroom with, because it doesn't have a din of kedusha. Whereas a talit gadol, we try to avoid going to the bathroom with a talit gadol, because it has a designation for tefillah. So therefore, a talit gadol might have that greater status or higher level of kedusha because of its designation specifically for tefillah and for things of kedusha. And especially, again, if you wrap up a sefer Torah with it, for sure it would attain that status of kedusha. Vamarova, hai tevuta de irpat, if you have an Aron Kodesh that has become old or decayed, it's breaking down, mi'avda teva zutrate shari. If you want to make a smaller Aron Kodesh out of it, that is permissible. Kursaya, but if you want to make a bima out of it, asur, because that'd be a moridin bikodesh, and you can't do that. Vamarova, hai priso de bala, a parochet that has been worn down, mi'avda priso de sifre shari, to make it into a cover for the Sfarim is mutar. The Chumashim asur, but for Chumash is asur. Over here, Sifrei means a full Sefer, meaning a full Sefer Torah, whereas Chumashim are scrolls, like a Sefer Torah, but they only have individual Chumashim in them. That is asur, because again, that's not considered to be a high enough level of Kedusha to consider it not to be Moridim B'Kedusha. Ve'amarov, Hanei Zvilei de Chumshei ve'kamatrei de Sifrei. These covers of the Chumashim, and the Kamatre de Sifrei, and the boxes of the Sfarim, Tashmish Kedusha Ninhu. They are considered to be in service of something that's Kadosh, Benignazim, that they put in Geniza. I said, Pshita, of course, that's what it seems to be they're being used for. Why would you think otherwise? So, Madu Teimani, Lav the Kavod of Dinan. These items are not made to honor the object itself, but rather than to Reba Alma Avide, they're simply there to protect the object. And therefore, we would assume that they don't attain Kedusha because they're not there necessarily to service the item and to honor the item, but rather to protect the item. Kamash Malon, that's just not the case. They service both the things. They protect the item, but they're done in a manner that is of Kavod, and they become Tashmishei Kedusha because of that.
So the Rishonim actually think here the Gemara could have concluded in one of two ways. Either the Gemara is saying you're right, that it is used to protect the item, but despite the fact that it's used to protect the item, it gains the status of Dover Shebi Kedusha or Tashmishei Kedusha. The other possibility is to say, no, it's not used for protection, but rather it is an enhancement to the Torah or that which is being stored in it, and it is made to adorn it in some ways, and therefore it does have a status of Tashmishei Kedusha. The nafka minim between those two shitot are obviously when you have something that solely is there for the protection of the item. So, for instance, in Eretz Yisrael, they do this many times. They have a big safe, a black metal safe, in which they store the Sefer Torah, which is clearly just there to protect the Sefer Torah. It's not an Aron Kodesh that is there to enhance or to be beautiful or pretty for the Sefer Torah. So the nafka minim between those two answers would be, if you say when it's there to protect, it becomes a Tashmishei Kedusha, that would be a Tashmishei Kedusha. On the other hand, if you suggest that it's only a Tashmishei Kedusha when it has some sort of enhancement, then that would not be an item that gains Tashmishei Kedusha.
How Bei Knishta de Yudai Romai? There was this shul of the Roman Jews that had come to Bavel, so it was called a Jewish Roman shul. Dava Patiach Lahu Idrona. It opened up into some antechamber. Tavi machid beimet, that they used to keep the dead body, or when they were transitioning with the mate, they used to leave it in there. And the Kohanim wanted to go into daven in the shul, but they couldn't do that because it was in an antechamber that was connected by a door. And because of that, it allowed the Tumah to go into Beit Knesset, and the Kohanim couldn't enter the shul. So now Gemara says, they wanted to daven there. Atu amru le Rava. They went and asked Rava what to do. Amru, dalu tevuta, take the Aron Kodesh, odva, and then place it or sit it down in the doorway between the antechamber and the shul. Because it's a wooden vessel or utensil that is made to be stationary and not moved. And it creates a wooden utensil that is made to be stationary or fixed in place is not mekabel tuma. And if it's not mekabel tuma, then it can be chotzeitz mipnei tuma. It can act as a barrier, not allow the tuma to cross over. So if they place that in the door between the antechamber and the Beit Knesset, that would stop the tuma tamed from coming through to the shul, and then it would allow the kohanim to enter into the shul. Sometimes they carry around the Aron Kodesh. When there's a Sefer Torah in it. In that case, it's moved around when it's full and empty, which is the qualification or the way to determine whether something is a Kli Eitz Asui Denachat. Something that's permanently affixed or stationary, something that is left in place and cannot be carried around when it's empty or full. Whereas here, now we're carrying out whether it was empty or full, they can carry it around. Once they do that, it's not Kli Eitz Asui Denachat. Then he says, then if that's the case, you can't use it, and I don't have a solution for you how to stop the Tuma from entering into the Beit Knesset. And you need to get something there that's going to stop the Tuma from crossing over. The Aron Kodesh is certainly not going to work anymore because it's not considered to be Kleitz Asur Denachat based on what you're telling me now. Amar Azutra, Mitpachot Svarim Shibalu, these covers of the Svarim that have now deteriorated, Osim Otan Tachrim Chim Lemeit Mitzvah. You can use them as shrouds for a Meit Mitzvah, Zui Gnizatan. Mean that you're simultaneously doing a mitzvah with them and being gonez them. The requirement is to put them into Geniza. But you can put them into Geniza by using them as a shroud for the mates because they're going to get buried anyway. If you have a Sefer Torah that's worn down, decayed, deteriorated, gonzino to etzel tamid chacham. You put it into Geniza, we bury it next to a tamid chacham, afilu shone halachot. Even not if he's not on the highest level of being a tamid chacham, as long as he was tamid chacham that learned Shonei Halachot, he learned Mishnayot and Brito, but he did not know the Gemara as we know it. He didn't know how to go beyond those of Mishnayot. Nevertheless, that's sufficient to allow us to put a Sefer Torah and bury it together with him to put it into Geniza. Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Ubekli Cheres. When you bury the Sefer Torah, you put it inside of a earthenware utensil. Shneamar V'natatem Bekli Cheres L'man Yamdu Yamim Rabim. So in Yirmiyahu, when it's describing about the sale and the contract of sale that Yirmiyahu says to put away so that it show that they're going to come back and they eventually will come back here. So he says to put in a kli cheres, put into a clay utensil because it's going to be a long time before you're going to need this title in order to get this land back. I mean that there's going to be galut and then only after that will you return. But you see that kli cheres is a way to protect and to keep something for the long duration. So the same thing over here, when you're putting the Sefer Torah into Geniza, we don't want to be actively causing it to deteriorate faster. So we put it into an item that will maintain the status quo and protect with the Sefer Torah. Amar Rav Papi Mishmei Derova, Mibeik Nishta the Bei Rabbanan Shari. To change something from a shul to a Beit Midrash is mutar. Mibei Rabbanan the Beik Nishta from a Beit Midrash to a shul, asur. That's problematic. For Rav Papa Mishmei Derova Matne Ipcha. Rav Papa, in the name of Rav, says just the opposite, which is to move it from a Beit Midrash to a shul is permitted. From a shul to Beit Midrash is not permitted. Amar Rav Acha Kavate de Rav Papi Mistavra. Rav Papi's version of this makes more sense. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Beit HaKnesset Mutar Lasoto Beit Midrash. So Rav Yeshua ben Levi telling us that a shul can be made into a Beit Midrash. That's the case. Now it seems to be Tosfot. He says here, you see from here that the Gemara thinks that Rav Yeshua ben Levi trumps Rabbi Yochanan when it comes to a machloket. So since we pass an halacha like Rav Papi because Rav Yeshua ben Levi supported him, despite the fact that Rabbi Yochanan might have disagreed with that. Okay, with that we're going to stop over here and we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.